The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud. We've got a pre-recorded show for you today as I'm at CatalystCon West at the Los Angeles Marriott Burbank Airport Hotel. And probably at this moment, getting ready for the big opening keynote. If you want to find out about when the next CatalystCon is, go to catalystcon.com. I want to remind you about some of my upcoming events. October 15th to the 17th, I'm going to be one of the keynote speakers for the Sex Down South Conference in Atlanta. There is an exceptional lineup of presenters at this particular event. It's going to be really, really good. And you can find out how to register at sexdownsouth.com. And on October 19th, I am teaching anal sex for everyone at Sugar in Baltimore. Sugar is one of my absolute favorite sex positive stores in the country. And I love Jack, who's the owner. I got to teach a poly class there just a little bit ago, and I'm excited to return and do anal sex for everyone. That is up on my website, puckerup.com. If you click on tour, you can get the link to sign up for tickets. And I'm also working right now on bringing my sex educator bootcamp to Washington, D.C. that same week, the week of October 19th. So stay tuned for details about that. And hey, our big sale at puckerup.com is still going on. 25% off all toys, including Enjoy, Vixen, Tantus, and all Slickwid Lube. 25% off, no special code needed. Big bargains to be had, so go over there and treat yourself. I'm really excited about my guests today. Let me tell you about them. I've got two. Andrew Morrison Gerza is a disability awareness consultant whose passion is making disability accessible to everyone. In his work, he highlights the lived experience of persons with disabilities to show that disability is a universal experience we can all embrace. Within the LGBTQ plus community, Andrew works to deconstruct our homonormative body beautiful ideals and show that queers with disabilities deserve representation. His goal is to welcome everyone into the conversation. In early 2015, Andrew was named Canada's most prolific advocate for queers with disabilities by Crew Magazine. He is the founder and co-director of Deliciously Disabled Consulting, a company that aims to make the lived experience of disability accessible to pop culture. He also hosts his own internet radio program, Deliciously Disabled, a discussion of sex, disability, and everything in between. He's presented at numerous conferences. He's been on MTV. He also had a short film made about him, which was called Bedding Andrew, which screened at the Reeling Film Festival in Chicago. And Andrew's partner in crime is Stella Palikarova. How did I do on that? How did I do on that last name? That was okay? Okay, Stella Palikarova. is a writer and filmmaker and co-director of Deliciously Disabled, which is their consulting and motivational speaking company. She is currently completing her Master's of Information at the University of Toronto with a background in film and psychology from York University, having graduated summa cum laude. Her academic interests have always related to the intersecting experiences of disability, from her undergraduate thesis on the dating experiences of adolescent girls with congenital physical disabilities, to her current thesis work on the ethical implications of cybernetic implants for people with disabilities. And for the latter, Stella received a master's SSHRC. She's a frequent guest speaker on subjects pertaining to disability and also still pursues filmmaking and creative writing. Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Andrew and Stella.
Thank you for having us.
So I want to start with you, Andrew. I'm really excited to have this talk. And actually, right before we went on the air, someone tweeted at me, I've been waiting for you to cover this on your show. So obviously, there's other folks who want to have this talk too. But conversations about disabled folks and sexuality are really quite rare, especially in mainstream media and culture. Why do you think that is?
I think it is because people are just, they're so afraid to say the wrong thing or to be offensive. And nobody really knows what to do because we've never seen it before. So instead of really addressing it, we don't talk about it because it doesn't affect the majority of us. So why have the discussion?
And Stella, do you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I would just say that generally speaking, people are afraid of what they don't know, right? So if you don't know anything about it, you tend to sort of put it into the back of your mind or pretend that it doesn't exist. And we never see any sort of really portrayals of people with disabilities in pop culture as sexual and as potential dating, you know, and romantic partners. So then we don't think of it. We think, well, they don't do that. They're not interested in that.
Yeah, I mean, it really does seem like there's this erasure of sexuality. Like, disabled people are thought of to be asexual or not interested in sex at all, which isn't fair because, I mean, statistically speaking, that doesn't seem to be true. There are no more asexual disabled people than there are asexual non-disabled people, right?
Right.
Yeah, I wouldn't say so.
What do you think are some of the biggest myths about disabled people and sex?
Well, the biggest myth is that we don't have it and that we don't want to have it. Anybody who you talk to with a disability will tell you that sex is no more or less a part of our experience than anybody else. And oftentimes we want it more because it's so hard to have access to it.
Yeah, I think also there tends to be this infantilization of people with disabilities. So, like, I've heard a lot, well, I can't, you know, have sex with this person because that would be taking advantage of them, as if, you know, we're not capable of giving consent or that is somehow inappropriate. And to a certain degree, I can see where that myth would come from because I'm sure there have been many instances where people have been taken advantage of sexually, or, you know, people with disabilities are seen as an easier target by some people. But at the same time, that can be really damaging for the rest of us who, you know, want to have sex, who do have sex, and are more than able to give our consent.
It's particularly damaging when that's the only narrative we ever see.
Yeah.
And so do you ultimately feel like you've been left out of sex-positive conversations and communities?
I wouldn't say so. I'd say that we haven't been left out, but we certainly haven't been let in either. No one is having the conversation the way that we want to have it, I think. So we're trying to create a new conversation that is not just for people with disabilities, but to invite everybody into that conversation around sex and disability in a way that
Sorry, Andrew, go ahead.
Sorry, Sally, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think, too, that all the narratives that we see out there are very polarized. So you either have the narrative of the person with the disability who, you know, we need to feel sorry for, or there's this sense of pity in the story, all the hardships, all of this, or there's the other end of it, which is like super positive narrative, you know, the heroic person with a disability who has overcome all the odds, or, you know, there's some great story there. And I think it's important to recognize that there are so many dimensions to living with a disability that it is this really three-dimensional experience with good and bad interlaced into it. And we don't really see any frank discussions of what living with a disability is like.
Andrew, you said we're not having the conversations that we want to be having. So what does that look like?
All right, well, let me just back up in terms of what I said. In terms of the conversations we are having around disability, we're either talking about all of the inabilities that we have, everything we can't do, so we're talking about the pathology of disability, or we're talking about disability in a political context all the time, so rights, access, and all those things. Those are great, but neither of those conversations make me want to rip my pants off and and get naked with somebody with a disability. Neither of those conversations get me excited in any way, and I got tired of not having that conversation around what sexuality and disability and living with a disability is actually like on a day-to-day basis. I wanted to discuss with the world, how does disability really feel every day? How does it feel to sit in a 300-pound chair every day and deal with that? And what are the ups and downs and the reality of that? And that's the kind of conversation that I wanted to start having.
Okay, well, we're going to start having it, and we have started. But first, we're going to take a commercial break and hear from our sponsors. Coming up, I want to hear more about this. I want to have a frank, open discussion about the things that you live with every day. And then I want to talk more about Deliciously Disabled. So stay with us. More with Andrew and Stella when we return.
Follow us on Twitter at VoiceAmericaTRN. Get the lowdown on guests, new shows, and your favorites. That's VoiceAmericaTRN.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Tune in to the Hospitality News Network for a look inside the travel, hotel, restaurant, and hospitality industry. Host Stephen Nicole and his guests will teach you everything you've wanted to know about this fascinating industry. Who knows? You might just want to change your own career path. At the very least, you might end up being a preferred customer. The Hospitality News Network is broadcast live every Monday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Families today face unique challenges. Marriage, parenting, and family forms have changed a lot in the last century. Family Matters with Dr. Virginia Collin will focus on building and maintaining healthy family relationships. We will discuss marriage, divorce, family mediation, parenting, lifestyles, and mental health, all kinds of family matters. Our show will feature guest experts and your participation, too. You can listen to Family Matters live every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with disability activists and consultants Stella Palikarova and Andrew Morrison Gerza of Deliciously Disabled. So, Andrew, before the break, you talked about the realities of living with a disability and how there isn't enough conversation about that, and about how you feel on a daily basis. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, so I am somebody who lives the experience of living with cerebral palsy, which means for me that I had brain damage at birth, which means that I'm unable to walk. But because people see me in a 300-pound chair, they assume that I've been paralyzed, they assume that my dick doesn't work, they assume that I can't have sex, and they really assume all, they assume that I am intellectually impaired. All these things are assumed on me without really talking about the kind of life that I lead and what I do in my day. I'm also a queer man with a disability, so there's that whole side to it too. I live in an environment where I have attendant care on site, so if I need something personal, someone's available to me. But it's very interesting because people don't really understand how that side of it works either. So it's always talking about these things that people don't really think about, like having somebody do your personal care on a day-to-day basis, having somebody touch you as an attendant all the time, and wanting a very particular kind of touch when you can't receive it. All those things are stuff that I talk about in the work that I do.
And I assume your relationship with your attendants is a kind of intimacy, or does it feel very kind of routine and doesn't feel intimate?
It's very routine. You have to get to a place of comfort with these people that are helping you, but it's certainly, you have to also respect a boundary, and it's very professional. Mm. It's kept very, very professional just to protect everybody in the situation.
And Stella, what would you want people to know about your lived experience as a disabled person?
Oh, wow. Well, that's a topic that I could talk about forever. But as it relates to like dating and sexuality, I can definitely say, I'm in a privileged position where I can hire my own personal support workers because I'm on a program that allows me to do that. But it can still be very hard to recruit people, that are comfortable doing things like shaving me. For example, like I shave everywhere, my nether regions and everything. And that are okay, putting some lingerie on me if I want to feel sexy and go on a date like that. And that when it comes to dating, there's just so much more preparation, right? So you have to find a venue that's like physically accessible. I need assistance with all my activities of daily living, going to the washroom, bathing, everything like that. But I do have normal sensation everywhere, so I get the same stereotypes sort of that Andrew does, in the sense that I either don't want sex or I'm not interested in it or I can't enjoy it. And so there's just a lot more planning. Getting ready for a date is like a full day operation. I have to have my PSW come in here, get me all ready, then like makeup takes longer. As a woman with a disability, there are just so many additional things that might take other women like 20 minutes to do that take me like 3 hours to do. So, and then, when I've been in long-term relationships, I need to be repositioned during the night. So having somebody spend the night here, that's a whole other negotiation that happens with my PSW. They have to know there's somebody that's going to be sleeping in my bed, that they're going to have to walk in the middle of the night while that person is here and reposition me. Not only that, but my partner has to be okay with that. That can be a whole separate challenge all on its own. And, it's really hard work. Like we hear all the time from people, oh, I hate dating. I hate dating takes on a whole new meaning when you're a person with a disability. It's like, I really hate having to let somebody new into all of those like aspects of my daily life, like over and over again, to have to do that when you're getting to know somebody, when you're at that phase in your relationship, when you're both trying to decide, hey, is this a person that I can see myself with? Is this a person that complements me and complements my life? Well, that's a lot harder to sort of convince somebody of when you have all of these sort of additional things, right? So it's very challenging.
on the flip side to that, what if you just want to fuck? Like,
what well, there is want, that like, too.
Like what? But what if you just want to? What if, you know? There are days where I just want to meet somebody and be spontaneous and do my thing with the person who's consenting and have a good time. And much like what Stella was saying, all of this planning has to be.
Yeah.
You can't be spontaneous. I can't bring somebody home and not think about my attendant care, my urine bag, what is the person going to think? Should they stay the night? Are they going to be able to assist me? All these things that are going through your brain, so you can not really enjoy the experience because you're constantly worried about the next thing that might happen or that might scare them away.
Yeah, see, like for me as a woman with a disability who primarily dates men, like I don't really have any issue getting laid. Like I could go online right now and have somebody that like wants to come over tonight, and they don't care that I have a disability most of the time.
Jealous.
As long as I don't want to date them, if I just want to screw them, they don't care. There's like a curiosity element. Like I find that a lot of men are kind of curious. They want to know what it's like to be with a woman with a disability. Or there's like a fetishization, if I can say that word, that sometimes happens. So there's a curiosity. But then, of course, I have to do all of the preparation. The PSW has to be here. You know, it takes a lot longer to get ready. And then imagine taking 6 hours to get ready for someone. And they're like, I need a rain check.
Right. And if it's Craigslist, it's pretty much a rain check all the time. I mean, like, you know, everyone flakes. Yeah. I feel like everyone flakes on these, you know, on these things.
Yeah.
Okay, wait. So you said you're jealous, Andrew. So does that mean, I mean, I would think as a gay guy, you know, just the popular wisdom is gay guys get laid more than anyone, especially if you want to do it sort of anonymously or one time or hook up on, you know, a social media platform or an app. Yeah. But you're saying Stella gets laid more than you do.
I mean, it sounds like that's the case. You know, for me, being a queer man with a disability, I don't fit your prototypical stereotype of what a gay man is supposed to be able to do. So therefore, I can't, like, there's a big thing in the queer community where you would top or bottom, and I don't fit those strictures at all. So because I don't fit that, and people assume that I can't fuck physically, therefore, I am not as viable as a queer man.
And do you also feel like, I mean, there's this emphasis in some gay communities on sort of looks and body types and, you know, being kind of beautiful and built and, all, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like all these gay guys, when they write their personal ads, are always about sort of like how great their body is.
Yeah.
And how do you sort of let people know, hey, I want to fuck and I can fuck and I have a disability?
I make it a joke, quite honestly. I'll make jokes about my big joystick. I'll make jokes about that you can take a ride on my chair. I mean, you know, I really play with what I have available to me, and I'm starting to learn that the way to do that is to not discredit the disability, but to use it as an opportunity to make someone see that there is viability here.
And I'm curious, Stella, because you talked about this fetishization of people with disabilities. How do you navigate that? Like, how do you navigate getting involved with someone, even if it's just a one-time hookup, who might be kind of exoticizing you?
Well, it's rough, right? Because, like, on the one hand, I don't necessarily have a problem with it. Like, if, you know, people have their fetishes, things that they're into or that they want to try out, and that's all totally valid, but it's about how they're approaching me. So are they respecting me? Is this somebody that I'm going to feel safe with, to be alone with? Because, you know, if this person, like, lifts me into my bed and then just decides to leave me there with no phone and no nothing, it could be hours and hours before somebody ever figures out where I am and what's happened to me, right? So, like, there are all these sort of safety concerns that do boil into it, and I don't want to feel like they're just interested in my disability or that they're not going to, you know, treat me like a person. But at the same time, like I said, if if it's a fetish and it's something they're curious about, well, who am I to say that's, you know, that's not cool or that's not valid?
I mean, it's interesting terrain to navigate. It really is. Okay, so we're going to take another break. Coming up, we're going to talk about this event the two of you produced called Deliciously Disabled. In the press, they called it an accessible orgy for disabled people, but it was kind of more than that, although there were some orgy elements. So it was incredibly groundbreaking. Of course, it happened in Canada because all good things happen in Canada first. Hi, Canada. Yeah, I want to hear all about it and what the outcome was like and where we go from here. So stay with us, more with Stella and Andrew when we come back.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Your best legal defense is the show that's here to answer your legal questions. Hosted by Lonnie McDowell, one of the top 100 California criminal defense trial attorneys, our program will answer your questions about the criminal justice system, even if you need to be anonymous. Lonnie demonstrates a firm understanding of the legal system, and his guests have experience in a number of facets of the law. Be prepared. Tune in. Your best legal defense airs Saturdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
On the morning of August 5, 1962, the world awoke to the shocking news that Marilyn Monroe, one of the biggest icons in Hollywood history, had been found dead. What really happened that night? Join Nina Bosky as she seeks to uncover both the life and tragic death of Marilyn Monroe and what keeps her so popular over 50 years later. Good Night Marilyn Radio, live every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at PuckerUp.com. That's Tristan at PuckerUp.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. My guests today are Andrew Morrison-Gerza and Stella Palikarova from Deliciously Disabled. And the two of you, along with some other members of the community, put on this event in August called Deliciously Disabled. And it was an accessible sex party for people with disabilities and their allies and their lovers and their friends in Toronto. It was sponsored by the local sex club, Oasis Aqua Lounge, although it wasn't there because that is a sort of historic place and is not accessible. It's like three stories. But first, tell me of some of the challenges of putting together what I believe is like the first ever event like this.
I'll let Stella take the lead on that one.
Our first biggest challenge was honestly locking down a venue because in Ontario, we still have, and in Canada in general, we still have a lot of physical access issues. We do have the Ontarians with Disabilities Act, which is trying to mirror in some ways the ADA in the U.S., but it's not quite there. Physical access doesn't really come into play until 2025. So that's really still a long ways away. So as you can imagine, in Toronto, we have a lot of historic buildings like Oasis, restaurants and the like that are not physically accessible. So for us to try to find any place, like we went to a number of different hotels, community centers, they all turned us away when they sort of knew what this event was all about. And that was our, I think, our number one problem in the beginning. And then the next challenge was really the media was putting out the event as this crazy orgy for people with disabilities, which is really not, you know, quite what it was. We were trying to have an accessible play party that was open and accessible to everyone, and that was for people with disabilities, because we've traditionally been left out of these kinds of events and from a lot of social spaces. So we wanted to really make something that was fully accessible to everyone. But it, I mean, the way the media was portraying it was just, you know, 100 people with disabilities were all going to get together and bang, right? So
I mean, and that was, you know, that was something we first when we first saw that in the media, we all went, oh no. But then, you know, we kind of used that to get ourselves more press and to really. So I am kind of thankful that they used the word orgy, because that really brought us a lot of attention where this issue wouldn't have been given attention otherwise.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, that as I was reading it, I was thinking, oh God, like people don't understand just like what sex positive space is. Like, and if 100 people come, 100 people are not having sex like simultaneously.
Yeah.
But it also seemed to me to say that there's an orgy for disabled folks was like this entirely radical concept, and like people's brains could explode just reading that, right?
They did explode for
right.
me.
Right, and so part of it is amazing in that everyone then has to immediately conjure this image, or I did. I conjured an image of this disabled orgy, and it was it actually was hot. It was really hot.
Well, having been there, we can both tell you it was.
Okay, so how was the party? Like, what happened? How did it go? What was it like in terms of your expectations?
Well, Stella and I had never done one. Neither of us had ever been in an accessible play space before. So from my perspective, I walked into the, like, I remember getting to the venue that night early to, like, help set up and be there and to, like, start greeting. And I remember being in the space being like, wow, this is a space where anything literally within consensual means could happen right now. And that was really exciting for me because I'd never done it. So I was nervous and excited, and I just wanted to just see what would happen. And I had no real expectation of what should happen or shouldn't happen. I just wanted to just, I was really awestruck that finally this thing we had been planning for 6 months and this thing that nobody thought we could pull off was actually happening right then.
And I understand there was some pushback right beforehand, that some conservative folks were mad because the venue that you did end up getting, which is Buddies in Bad Times, which is a theater, gets some sort of government funding. And so they were saying, oh, my God, the government is funding this orgy.
it's a queer theater space in Toronto. It's going 35 years strong. And they were very, very supportive of the idea. Of course, because they are funded by the government, people immediately thought that they were funding this huge orgy. What happened was Oasis Aqua Lounge rented out the space, so no taxpayer funds were put down towards the event. So everybody was freaking out for no reason when they should have just been relying, you know, realizing that no funds were happening that way. And so, yeah, people pushed back a bit just because the whole idea of a sex party with disabilities kind of turned some people off. And I was surprised. I got a lot of emails from individuals with disabilities who told me that we shouldn't be doing this event and you know, God's going to smite us and, oh my God, what are we doing? There are better people in hospitals who are doing better things. And I was like, wow, this is from somebody who is so afraid of their own sexuality. They're not going to, wow. I was surprised by how much pushback came from within the community.
But this is, to me, like, Andrew, I don't know if you see it the same way, but like for me, that's just an example of internalized depression. Like, really, if you think about it, sexuality and the right to sexual expression is a huge human rights issue, right? Like, it's just as important as being able to go to the bathroom and eat. Like, we're looking at a population that, you know, many people within the population, depending on how severe their physical disability is, they can't even pleasure themselves, right? So you're in a situation where you can't masturbate, you can't use a sex toy without assistance, and there's just no possibility for a sexual release of any kind and to explore your sexuality. So, like, that's such a huge human rights issue, and it's so connected to all the other issues that are facing people with disabilities that this may have been a very in-your-face way to bring attention to it, but sometimes that's the only way you can bring attention to these things.
I agree.
Well, and it seems like even if there was pushback from within the community, I think that that's a typical thing also within minority communities, which is like when people put together something, there's always voices to tell you, like, you're doing it wrong, you're representing us in the wrong light or in the wrong way, rather than, like, you're doing your thing and you guys can do your thing. I mean, you know what I mean? I feel like that's just like a phenomenon in minority communities, right? That all of a sudden, like, the hate sort of comes at you from both sides.
Yeah, and we experienced that, like, head on, but...
Yeah.
But I also love this idea that you're talking about, Stella, where you're talking about basic human rights and like the, you know, that everyone has the right to eat, to nourish themselves, and that
right.
sex should be seen as part of one of these basic needs and wants. Because I do feel like once you say sex, you know, all hell breaks loose because it's sex and because everyone wants to put it in this other category of being like prurient or obscene or you know, I feel like no one sees it just a sort of a basic part of our humanity.
Yeah, there's just too much moralizing around sex in general. There always has been. It's always going to be a contentious issue for a lot of people. But if we try to really look at it objectively and strip away like all of that moralizing, you know, it's very obvious that sex is just a basic, it's a basic human need, it's a basic human right, and, you know, we should all have access to that, but unfortunately, not everyone does, and people don't think about that.
And I mean, this wasn't just about a party, it was about a party, and it was about sex, but it was also bigger. So tell me, like, some of your goals. Now that you've put yourselves on the map and everyone's like, oh my God, these are the crazy orgy disabled people, what are you going to do with that platform? Like, what are some of your goals? Are there more parties in the works? Are what? Tell me.
We're definitely hoping to expand on the party front. We've had requests from all over the world since the party happened to have us come and be a part of events and come and do talks and come and do writing on the event. But what we really want to do now is move not away from the party, but also start having these conversations that the party brought to light under the Deliciously Disabled banner, and really talk about some of the fears people had about the party, why people were concerned about disability, really use Deliciously Disabled to have these tough conversations around sexuality and disability positivity, so that everybody can be included in the conversation and really talk to individuals who may never have experienced disability before and who are curious and say, okay, do you now want to become a Deliciously Disabled ally and take a picture with us and, you know, help us spread the word? Because we understand that you're curious and we want to be there for you to tell you our lived experience.
Okay, well, you brought up being an ally, and I definitely want to get into that in the next segment, but we're going to take another break for now. I hope you're sticking with us, people, because this is a really important conversation and also an important conversation starter. This is just one conversation. We need to obviously have a lot more. So let's take a break, and when we come back, we will continue to hear about Deliciously Disabled and Andrew and Stella's plans for the future. Be right back.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning Expert Guide Sex Education Series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
Up Close with Chris Tinney is now on Voice America Variety. Every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, Chris brings you the thought leaders, activists, and socially responsible entrepreneurs taking action for the environment, doing business in a new way, and helping the underprivileged. Call in or listen in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, and learn how the small decisions you make today have a big impact on our small planet in the future. Tune in to Up Close with Chris Tinney on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. We are talking with the minds behind Deliciously Disabled, Andrew Morrison-Gerza and Stella Palikarova. Before the break, Andrew, you brought up being an ally. And I would like to know from you about some strategies. How can able-bodied people become more aware of our biases and assumptions and be better allies to disabled folks?
I think the biggest thing that you have to do to be an ally to any oppressed group, whether you're disabled, whether it's a racial issue, any oppressed group that we're talking about today, you have to start by listening and just listen about the lived experience. So what I want from allies for people with disabilities is to just sit with me and listen when I'm having a great day about disability, when my day has been fantastic and my disability was awesome and I enjoyed it today. Let's talk about that. But on the days where it's really shitty and I want to vent about it and scream, I also want somebody to just listen to me about that too. And I think that's something that often people forget when they talk to, you know, people with disabilities. They'll say things like, well, at least you're this, or at least this is not a thing, when all you want to say is, let me just have my moment where it's crap and just be there with me and just be in the room and be in the space and let me show you how I'm feeling about it today. Because everybody tries to say, well, at least, you know, it could be worse, blah, blah. And you're just going, well, it could be, but right now it feels like this. Let's talk about how it feels right now. And so what I want allies to do is understand how the lived experience feels right now.
I think it's also really important for like people to question their assumptions, right? So we have all these assumptions and stereotypes around people with disabilities and what life is like with a disability, but I wish that we could just take a pause and, you know, ask ourselves, where are these assumptions coming from? Why do I have them? And for me personally, when I'm interacting with somebody new, especially who doesn't have a disability, I would love it if they were able to just chuck their assumptions at the door, so to speak. So try to come into the conversation without having those and just get to know me and what is unique about me, not only in terms of my disability, but as a person. And just know that not everybody's disability is the same. So, you know, it's really frustrating when you meet somebody and they're like, oh, yeah, I have a cousin who's in a wheelchair, so I know what that's all about. It's just kind of like, no, it doesn't quite work that way. It's not a uniform thing, you know?
And I mean, one of the questions that I really wish that people would, and I really want people to start asking, instead of asking, hey, so what happened to you there? They'll always have people always come up to me in the world and say, so what happened to you here? And they'll do this weird hand wavy thing where they like wave over your body and be like, so I don't, what was that, what's all this? What I really want them to say is, hi, I've noticed you have a disability and that scares the shit out of me, but I'd like to learn about it. What do I need to know? Because that would then allow me to say, let's start this conversation right.
Okay, that's an important piece because you just modeled the language for us. Because I do think people get tripped up. You were talking about this at the very beginning. They get tripped up because they don't know and they don't want to say the wrong thing. So they say nothing. Or they just say something really inappropriate, like you said. Yeah. But I like this that you've given us the pickup line, basically. Now, again, if we say that, it doesn't all mean that we all want to have sex with you. But I mean, you know, you've given us the line that's sort of the entry into the conversation.
I think the biggest entry is fear, actually. If you own the fact that my disability scares you a bit and you admit that to me in a polite way, then I can work through it with you.
And does it ever exhaust you? Like, are you ever just sick of educating people who are able-bodied?
I personally get sick of it. I do get sick of it. But I also remember that because of my disability, for me personally, I don't know if Stella feels this way, but for me, this is my opportunity to create change. So as exhausting as it is, and there are days where I'm like, fuck it, I don't want to do this today. But I have to remember what opportunities this disability has afforded me and move forward. And if I can change somebody's viewpoint right in that moment, then I've done my job.
Yeah, I mean, for me, there's definitely, you know, you get that sort of burnout as well, explaining the same things over and over and over again. But I don't know about Andrew, but I do also feel a certain sense of responsibility because we do, from a certain perspective, come from a position of privilege. You know, we're both educated. We come from backgrounds of families that have been very supportive. And not everyone has that kind of support system in place or the resources that we've had growing up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, from that perspective, I feel like if I'm not trying to change things for the better for everybody's experience as much as I can, then that really is a wasted opportunity.
You know, I had my own experience actually in Toronto, which is so funny. I wanted to make the Feminist Porn Conference accessible, and I was having it at University of Toronto, which has given us amazing support. And they basically said, yes, the event is wheelchair accessible. Like, yes, the venue is wheelchair accessible. And it wasn't until I got on site that it was sort of wheelchair accessible, but not entirely. And so there were like these weird things about the building in Toronto where like this room would be accessible, but then there was this big giant bar in the way and you couldn't actually like open the doors because the bar was still there and it was fixed. Or like the accessible route to get somewhere was like taking 15 minutes versus everyone else taking like 1 minute to get there. And so I had to sort of switch everything around and we had to move it to a different building. And it was just really a hard lesson to learn. But I want to say that listening was my best strategy at that point, is that I had people there who were committed to helping me figure it out and to telling me what I did wrong and to telling me how to make it better.
That's good. That's fantastic. I think one of the biggest problems we have when we talk about accessibility in social spaces is we have all these laws coming into effect in Ontario, or we're supposed to have them. Even in the States, we have the ADA, all about accessibility and what's supposed to be accessible and what's not and all this stuff. But nobody really looks at is what does accessibility mean for the person coming into these events? What does it mean to not be able to access these events versus how you feel if you could get in? So when I go to bars or want to go meet dudes or want to go to queer spaces, many of them are inaccessible. And to be quite honest, having to watch my friends get ready to go to the bar and then me have to turn around and go home is like, well, that sucks. And if they had just talked to a person living with a disability, like frequently saying, okay, what can we do for you? How can we make this better? They would find a way to make the experience and the venue livable for somebody with a disability.
Yeah, and it's also important to remember that it's like it's not good enough just to say, like, that something is sort of accessible, right? Sort of like the experience that you had. I mean, with the ADA, I just came back from Washington, and it was great because everything is physically accessible. You know, the metro, the buildings, I can get around everywhere if I'm rich. Because unlike Canada, they do not allow caregivers or PSWs to attend the different museums and attractions and things like that for free. So if I'm a tourist trying to get around D.C., and I happen to have a disability, and I need a PSW with me, I better have like a pocket full of money, because it's going to cost me twice as much as every other tourist. And not only that, but most people with disabilities are on some sort of disability like support program, or, you know, they don't have a lot of they don't have as much disposable income as somebody else would have, because we're always paying for everything anyway. So, I mean, it's great to say, well, this is accessible, but this isn't. That doesn't do me any good.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it just falls back into, we have to look at what is true accessibility and what does that mean?
But how do we make spaces accessible when there is such a range of disabilities within just this category of disabled? I feel like people think of wheelchairs and then they sort of stop short and they don't then go beyond to people who are deaf or people who are sight impaired, or, you know what I mean? I feel like that's another thing about ADA, is that it sort of revolves around the wheelchair but doesn't necessarily address other people's accessibility issues.
Well, it comes back to that point about listening that Andrew was talking about. Like, nobody ever really consults with the people that these accommodations are designed for. Nobody really consults them to say, hey, you know, what do you need? I mean, 80% of the bathrooms in Toronto that are marked as wheelchair accessible, I can't get into.
I learned that lesson the hard way. It's like, yeah, it also depends on the size of your chair and the type of chair you have.
It's like, what person, when they were making these policies, what person in a chair and what kind of chair and who did they ask? And did they ask everybody? Are we sure they did? Like, who knows?
And what kills me is a lot of the time there's just so much space in the bathroom, and then there's a tiny little stall. So it's like, you know what? You could have made this stall twice the size, and then it would have fit everybody. Like, it's a no-brainer, but people just don't think. They just stick to these narrow-minded, you know, oh, well, I stuck to the books, I stuck to the policy, so I'm in the clear. But they're not really asking themselves, okay, wait a second, if I have a big-ass wheelchair, am I really going to be able to use this bathroom? And why are we wasting all of this space that could be a part of the stall?
And what if I have to have somebody in there with me?
Not exactly.
Right.
Sexy fun time, or maybe it is. But what if what if I need somebody in the stall with me to help me get out of my chair to use the toilet? What do I do then?
I mean, these are like everyday problems that I feel like when you're able-bodied, you just don't. You know what I mean? It's like you see the wheelchair symbol like that, and then you're like, okay, that's accessible. But it's not even thought through in any sort of coherent way when you get down to the nitty gritty of how people navigate this. Okay, well, we're out of time. Oh my God, how did that happen?
Wow.
Okay, we're out of time. But I'm so glad you guys were on the show, and thank you so much. And now I'm going to plug all your stuff and tell people how to find you.
Awesome.
Andrew Morrison-Gerza and Stella Palikarova are co-directors of Deliciously Disabled, a disability awareness consulting and motivational speaking company. To find out more, Andrew's got a personal website, which is andrewmorrisongerza.com, and they're in the process of getting a website for Deliciously Disabled. You can also find Andrew on Twitter at @deliciouslydrew and Stella on Twitter at @deliciouslyglam. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett, Matt, my engineer, Nick on the board today, everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, for another edition of the show. Until then, talk about sex, sex and disability, and sex in general out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.